Just a Fool Who's Willing by Gotta Love V, read by Cookie Mom 6067. Wakanda embodies the utopia Steve was promised by science fiction when he was a kid. For one, it's breathtakingly beautiful. Africa is vast, and unlike anything Steve has ever seen before, but the busy capital keeps surprising him too. Whenever Steve walks in the streets, he can't seem to focus, his eyes jumping from one thing to the next. Shops offering food or crafts that cohabit with street vendors peddling devices that look alien to him. Steve can walk through a street he's taken dozens of times, but then he looks up, and he's thrown by unfamiliar architecture. Just the stimulation from the colors all around them at one given moment can make Steve dizzy some days, and that's without mentioning the technology, especially around the mine in Shuri's domain. But even if it's the most fascinating place he's ever been, 2 months into his exile, Steve also viscerally wants to go home. Somehow being here is more disorienting than waking up from a 70-year nap. To be fair, Wakanda is the future, too. Missing New York is like having a phantom limb. Even fresh out of the ice, Steve would find echoes of his time in the city. Even with all the new skyscrapers, way too much neon and advertising everywhere, it had remained bone-deep familiar. You didn't have to scratch the glitter for long to get back to the basics and the particular essence of New Yorkers. He shouldn't be bummed that he hasn't been insulted in weeks. When Steve retires to his room after a day trying to fit in like a square peg in a round hole, he can't resist the siren call of the internet. He has a routine to it, even. First, Steve checks his email. Mostly spam these days, but sometimes, very rarely, Nat drops a line, so he doesn't want to miss it. There has even been a mission or two, suggestions of where Steve and the others could help if they stayed under the radar. But when that's not an option, he likes to overview the day's top stories around the globe. It's been quiet on shitty situations needing his help lately, and Steve shouldn't be bummed about that, either. He always keeps the United States for last and tries his best not to Google the Avengers, or what is left of them. Steve is still taken aback by the polarization over the Accords and metahumans, and how vilified they all are. Even Tony, who is supposedly playing by the rules. Another habit Steve has developed is that he eats breakfast while his laptop streams New York's Spectrum News NY1 evening broadcast as background noise. Sometimes when he's not quite awake, he can forget for a moment that he's an ocean and a continent away. It is working on this unusually fogging morning, sort of, when the word Spider-Man catches his attention. He focuses on the screen and can see the kid fighting with robbers in an enclosed space for ATMs of some bank. He's slipping around, agile, but still 1 against 4. The bad guys have weird weapons. And are those Avengers masks? There's a couple of seconds of footage of the fight, and a laser thing then cuts the building and causes an explosion, making Steve curse under his breath. No casualties, they say, but a poor man lost his business. Steve realizes that he paused with a spoonful of cereal halfway to his mouth, and he puts it back in the bowl, not hungry anymore. He knows the boy is extremely strong, but that laser thing cut bricks. Taking his phone out, he goes through the short list of his contacts and writes a text. SR sent at 7:18. Is the kid okay? As soon as it's sent, Steve second-guesses the impulse. There is barely any time for him to fret about it that the phone chimes with the reply. Received from Tony Berner at 7:18. ? Received from Tony Berner at 7:18. What kid? Received from Tony Berner at 7:19. Did you mean to send me this? Steve curses under his breath. It's the first time either of them have used the phone, 2 whole months after Steve sent it. At least Tony keeps it close and charged. And he replied, that's a good sign, no? Steve powers through, as if texting is a thing they still do. SR sent at 7:19. That ATM fight saw the news. Received from Tony Burner at 7:20. He's fine. So that's Kurt. Now what? Steve desperately wishes to keep the conversation going, but has no idea how to do it. SR sent at 7:19. Good to hear. How are you? He watches the screen intently, biting his lip. He's expecting Tony to say something sarcastic, maybe a little mean. Seconds tick by, and the more time passes, the more Steve feels his chest constrict. Fuck. Tony never replies. The Rogue Avengers, as Scott calls them, never talk about their absent team members, and even less about the Accords. So when Sam, who is looking at his tablet, makes an intrigued sound but then follows it by a quick, guilty glance his way, Steve knows it's about one of the taboo subjects. What is it? Steve asks. Oh, nothing. Just found something interesting, Sam says vaguely. But he's caught, and he knows it. Which is? Sam sighs and pushes the tablet his way. The first thing Steve sees is the picture of Avengers Tower, which causes a pang of homesickness. But then he sees the article's title and forgets to breathe. Stark sells Tower for $1 billion. The words swim after that. Steve hasn't even lived at the Tower for a couple of years. All of his stuff is at the compound now, or was at the compound. But it holds great memories. It's where the Avengers got to know each other after all. It must be true. It's in the Wall Street Journal, but it doesn't make sense to Steve. That building is Tony's pride and joy, as ostentatious as it is, with the offices, the labs for Stark Industries, and the arc reactor that powers it. It's his home. Is Tony leaving New York to go back to the West Coast? Steve figures that his first attempt at texting wasn't great, but he has nothing to lose in trying again. SR sent at 16:40. You sold the tower? Just like the last time, the answer is almost immediate. Received from Tony Burner at 16:40. What is it to you? And ouch, that one hurts. Steve gets the message. Tony hates him and wants nothing to do with him. He'll keep the phone in case of emergencies, but he has no interest in small talk or attempts to reconnect. There's a ball of emotion in Steve's throat as he puts the phone in his back pocket, and he's sure it's showing all over his face. Are you okay? Sam asks. He looks concerned, and Steve tries to smile. You look shaken. Don't worry about it, Steve replies softly. He can't say he's fine. That would be too big of a lie. This is probably what heartbreak feels like. The events in Washington make it to New York's evening news. Spider-Man saved an academic decathlon team on a school field trip today, and Steve feels something like pride for a boy he doesn't even know. He definitely doesn't expect the phone to chime all on its own, and his heart starts hammering. Is Tony in trouble? Received from Tony Burner at 7:22. If you're still watching TV, kid's fine. The reaching out and civil tone is unexpected and a pure shot of joy laced with lots of hope. Steve hurries to type back. SR sent at 7:23. Saw it, yes. He did good. Received from Tony Burner at 7:24. He's great, especially when he's not worsening my heart condition. Steve frowns at that, but he doesn't know how to ask. Is Tony talking about the issues with the shrapnel? He got it all out, no? Before Steve finds a suitable question, another text comes in. Received from Tony Burner at 7:25. I never meant for the damn parachute to be used, but hey, I fished him out before he drowned, so it's all right. That reminds me I need to activate another tracker, as if I put only one. Ha! The message is complete gibberish. There was no parachute in what happened in Washington. But the last part of the text makes Steve tick. Tony's tracking the kid? Does he never learn? At least Steve has enough sense not to comment on that. SR sent at 7:25. Thanks for telling me he's doing well. I appreciate it. He desperately wants to ask how Tony is doing again, but he can learn from his mistakes, whatever some people say. Received from Tony Berner at 7:26. No problem. Pretty much fucking everyone, even on the other side of the globe, say I need to work on my issues, so I'm giving it a go. SR sent at 7:26. I'm sorry I contributed to that. Received from Tony Berner at 7:27. Okay, so I might have tackled too big too soon. I need to keep my energy centered, so going now. Shit, shit, shit. What is it with putting his foot into his mouth every time? Knowing with perfect certainty it's a terrible idea. Steve can't resist. SR sent at 7:27. Miss you. Follows a cascade of three texts, way faster than Steve would have ever managed to write himself. Received from Tony Berner at 7:28. A series of exclamation points. Received from Tony Berner at 7:28. You don't get to say that. Received from Tony Berner at 7:28. You really know how to make me angry. They've always had a knack to find exactly what made the other tick, that's for sure. He didn't say he misses Tony to hurt him, though. He desperately wants him to know he cares. SR sent at 7:29. I'm sorry, but it's true. I miss you. There's no answer, and Steve feels like there's a 50-50 chance he's made things worse. Selfishly, though, he feels lighter. Steve is finding it harder and harder to keep looking back to New York and everything, everyone, he misses. He's dealt, or more accurately, not dealt, with sadness and grief by shoving it down and away since 1939. But this new layer of hurt and loss might as well be the last straw. Clint and Scott are too deep into their own issues with their families to care about Steve's, but Sam and Wanda keep giving him looks. Steve ignores them as best he can, but he knows an intervention is probably in his future, unless Wanda is looking into his head. They must think it's about Bucky. I've got to say, Scott says one morning, I know we're supposed to hate him, but I'm glad Stark could help the people on the ferry. That was pretty badass. Steve's thoughts come to a halt with a screech. What? Okay, so that was loud, and Scott looks at him with wide eyes. Steve might have stood up abruptly, too, but he can't help it. He's vibrating with anger and frustration. Hate him? He says between clenched teeth. Scott raises his hand placatingly. Where did you get the idea we're supposed to hate Tony? Steve asks, trying to calm his voice, but it comes out chilly. Dangerous. I obviously misread. No, you didn't, Clint says, with a little sneer. And Steve hasn't had the urge to punch someone in the teeth this strong in a while. You shut up, Steve warns Clint, who's looking at him with a mean expression of his own. What? We learn from you, Clint adds. Before Steve does something he regrets, he leaves the patio where they'd been eating dinner and goes back inside. What the hell was that? He hears Scott ask as he walks away. That was Steve, fed up with your idiocy, the both of you. Thank you, Sam, Steve shouts. Gosh, what a mess. He debates doing something physical to clear his mind, but he keeps thinking of the less stupid part of Scott's statement about Tony being badass and helping a fairy. Back in the privacy of his own suite, Steve wakes up his laptop and types Iron Man in the search bar, sorting with a news filter. The incident with the Staten Island ferry pops up immediately. There are several videos from ferry passengers and tourists in a nearby boat that paint a dizzying picture. Spider-Man fighting with someone with huge mechanical wings, the boat being cut in half. Spider-Man again trying to keep the ship together and finally Tony, who sweeps in with multiple flying gizmos that look like repulsors with magnets. How Iron Man puts the two halves of the ferry back together, avoiding a catastrophe. The result is mostly material damage to the boats and several cars that have dipped in the Hudson, but no casualties. It's a miracle all in itself. Steve can't resist reaching out. SR sent at 10:55. You were amazing at the ferry. For the first time since they've started using the phone, Tony doesn't reply, not even to blow him off. After 5 minutes, Steve puts the phone aside and exhales. So that was a bust. He goes for a run on the treadmill to clear his head, which works partially. He almost falls off the machine in surprise when the phone he left in his towel on the floor chirps. Even more embarrassing is that he stumbles a second time when he steps down in a hurry to check the text. Received from Tony Bernard, 11:20. I know that you know I don't sleep much, but check your time zones. Received from Tony Bernard, 11:20. It's 3-something in the fucking morning, Stephen. The use of Stephen makes him smile. SR sent at 11:21. Oops. Received from Tony Bernard at 11:21. Don't try to be cute. God, it's so tempting to banter, and Steve just cannot help himself. SR sent at 11:22. Can't help it. Semicolon. Close paren. Received from Tony Bernard at 11:22. Look at you with your winky faces. Steve grins. God, he's missed this so much. Miss Tony. Received from Tony Bernard, 11:23. Was this just positive reinforcement time, or did you have another reason? It was just to tell Tony he did great. A new text comes in before he answers. Received from Tony Bernard, 11:24. Kids fine, BTW. SR sent at 11:25. Of course he is. He was great against me. Thugs like that can't be a problem for him. Received from Tony Bernard, 11:26. Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. What the hell? Didn't you see that gun that cut the boat in fucking halves? That's a fair point. SR sent at 11:26. Yeah, true. It's good you were there for him. Received from Tony Bernard, 11:27. Damn straight. I took back the suit, though. I was so mad. Well, mostly scared, but furious. I told him to stay away from those arms dealers. Steve had figured that the kid took too big by himself since he was alone fighting the guy with the wings at first before Tony got there. He'd investigated Spider-Man online when they'd first gotten to Wakanda. There was older footage in the streets of Queens of a small figure swinging around in what looked like blue and red pajamas. The first real images in his sleek new suit were from partygoers in Berlin the night before the fight at the airport. SR sent at 11:28. I should have guessed you made his new suit. And those web things? Received from Tony Bernard at 11:29. That's all him. He's brilliant. He totally could make his own suit if he wished to. Probably will. Received from Tony Bernard at 11:30. Speaking of the suit, he said he was nothing without it. Oh, hell no. I had no choice but to take it away then. Steve winces, remembering his confrontation with Tony on the helicarrier. That's not his proudest moment. SR sent at 11:31. He's young. He's got time. Received from Tony Bernard at 11:31. Not if he gets himself killed, which is fair, unfortunately. He wants to say that Spider-Man would be safer with a suit by Tony. No doubt it would offer as much protection that can be packed in it, but it's probably not the time to say it. Received from Tony Bernard at 11:31. Can you believe he looks up to me? Jesus, I can't deal with this. Steven snorts in amusement. SR sent at 11:32. Of course I can believe it. He's a smart kid after all. He knows he's going over the line again with the next text, even as he types it. No doubt that Tony will react badly because he's weary of compliments, but it's also the absolute truth. SR sent at 11:32, I admire you, even when we fought. There's a good half of a minute of silence, and Steve would pay to see Tony's face. All of his money to see him in person, in fact. Steve's nervous, and he's pushed Tony away again with his pathetic feelings. Received from Tony Berner at 11:33. Dot, dot, dot. Received from Tony Berner at 11:34. Dot, dot, dot. Received from Tony Berner at 11:34. Okay, so the only logical conclusion is that I am actually dreaming this. Of course he brushes it off, of course. For someone who projects being egotistical, Tony is incredibly insecure. Received from Tony Berner at 11:35. Which is a lame dream, as dreams about you go. I prefer the other kind. Steve's eyebrows climb up his forehead because what? He reads and rereads the lines, something light and bubbly forming in his chest, until it turns to lead with the next text. Received from Tony Berner at 11:35. Well, not the kind where you chop my head off. The other ones. The phone drops from Steve's suddenly nerveless fingers. Not the kind where you chop my head off. He feels sick. Tony really must be half asleep to say something like that because he's not cruel and hates to show vulnerability. There's another text preview, but he forces himself to reread the dreadful one again. Unfortunately, it's still right there. Steve cannot even feel better that the same line hints that there are way more pleasant dreams with him. He's cold all over. He then reads the next message. Received from Tony Berner at 11:36. So I will close this antiquated piece of crap, close my eyes, and hope to skip to something more pleasant. Steve finally types something. SR sent at 11:39. Sweet dreams, Tony. Please, please, let that be true. Steve, we have to go, Clint says on comm, urgent. It's something like the fifth time he's said a variation of it. Steve has lost count. Shit, Steve hisses, dodging a blast that looks way too much like a laser for his taste. What is it with bad guys and lasers these days? He wonders if they have the same supplier. We really have to, Scott insists. Steve is one floor down in the bunker, but they are on the first floor and can see what is coming. I can hear the cops. They're so close to cleaning house. Only two levels to sweep after this one, and Steve loathes to have to leave before finishing the job. You go, both of you, Steve says, finding a more secure hiding place when the top of the filing cabinet he's using for cover catches fire. Yeah, he better not get hit by that gun. I'll be right out. Come on, Clint gripes. Jesus Christ, Steve, you're going to get us caught. It's not worth it. Rationally, Steve knows that it's stupid to stay. He'd brought a small team, just him, Clint, and Scott, especially because he wanted to be discreet and able to retreat fast. If an Accord-sanctioned task force reaches the premises to take care of the baddies, they had to run or risk arrest. But what wasn't in the briefing packet Nat had shared with them on the down low is that those guys are Hydra. It's against Steve's every instinct, maybe even against his super soldier DNA, to turn around and run. The mere idea of retreating makes something churn in his gut. There's one of those round automatic vacuum cleaners on the floor, and Steve grabs it and throws it at his attacker as hard as he can. Upon hearing a curse, he dashes out of the office and comes face to face with another Hydra goon. Fortunately, two punches are enough to get the new guy down, but he can hear the first coming in after him. Being right out of the door means that Steve can see the muzzle of the laser gun before the guy holding it. He grabs and yanks, hissing at the burn on his hand from the gun. That shit hurts. But he holds on and twists, disarming the Hydra guard. Two elbows to the face, knock out that one too. Steve's breathing hard, flexing his hand with a wince when there's a call out, outside, on a loudspeaker. Police, you are surrounded. Everyone out with their hands in the air. Shit. They're really cutting it close. Clint, Scott, do you have an escape route? Barely, Clint says, tone clipped. He's angry that Steve didn't listen to him and will probably sulk for days. Where are you? Still downstairs, Steve answers. Go, I'll meet you at the rendezvous point. Got it. 3 hours and we leave without you. I'll be there in 30 minutes, Steve reassures. There must be another way out, other than the staircase Steve took to get a floor down. They're way too close to the front door and the police. Surely there's something in the back. The place is big enough that it would only be logical. He doesn't see more Hydra personnel, who are either in the basement or found an escape of their own. Steve would love to have the time to search the place for intel, but unfortunately he can't spare a minute for it. At least his instincts pay off, because Steve finds a staircase further down the basement and rapidly climbs 2 stories. The house is surely surrounded by now, and the back door will be watched. But from 1 floor above, Steve will have more options to leave unnoticed. Inside the house, the police are moving fast, cleaning out the rooms as they advance. He hears a shot here and there and officers calling out. All they have to do on the first floor is to cuff the Hydra men that Steve's team has conveniently left unconscious and ready to take away. On the 3 planes they had to take to reach this island, Steve had a lot of time to study the target and its surroundings. On the east side, there's a narrow alleyway that separates it from the smaller houses, and Steve thinks it's his best chance. Being as silent as he can, he hurries down a corridor that is going the right way, vindicated when he sees an opened window right where he hoped for it. He wouldn't be surprised that Clint and Scott left through there, too. A quick look down in the alley shows no one, which is great. Steve has climbed on the windowsill and is about to jump when there's a sudden movement above him. Nuh-uh, don't move. Shocked, he looks up. And yeah, that's Iron Man. Gauntlets lit up and ready to fire. Steve's heart thuds, and his first thought is that he's always found the armor especially beautiful in the sunshine. He's self-aware enough to realize how hopelessly devoted that makes him. Thank you very much. A more normal first reaction would have been to worry about getting a repulsor blast to the face for how they left things in Siberia, or even being annoyed or frustrated that he got caught. Visibly, Tony is surprised too. The armor rears back a little, but then he lowers his hands. Steve? Why are you still here, you idiot? Still here. Which means Tony knew Steve was coming. Nat told you? Steve asks, not sure how he feels about that. I told Nat to tell you, Tony replies. He sounds exasperated through Steve's comm link. Of course he found a way to break into it in less than 10 seconds. Oh. Somehow Steve hadn't considered that the missions might be coming from Tony. It makes sense that if the bureaucracy is slowing the legal Avengers, he'd get someone not hindered by the Accords to move faster. Frankly, though, this time Steve only had a 40-minute head start. We just got here, Steve admits, and he couldn't even finish the job. That's mildly embarrassing. From what Steve can hear, Vision is inside with the local forces, and Tony has identified the most logical way out of the house to catch possible escapees. They have this under control. You were supposed to get the intel 25 hours ago. Which is about when Steve received that email from Nat. We don't have a Quinjet anymore, Steve says. Flying commercial sucks. Tony laughs, and it's the best thing Steve has heard in months. I bet. I can't relate, but I bet, Tony replies, amused. I thought King Kitty Cat would have loaned you one of his cool little ships. Nah, Steve says. Doesn't Tony remember that Wakanda championed the Accords? This is all nice and good. Steve is thrilled that he's getting to talk to Tony in person, even if it's without seeing his face, and that Tony is making no move to arrest him even if he got caught on the premises. But in the house behind him, the police are advancing and Steve has to go. They're close, Steve says, pointing over his shoulder. Oh, right. Tony glides slightly to the side, leaving the escape route open and confirming he's letting Steve go. Steve jumps. It isn't that big a leap, and even if the tiles are slippery when he lands, it goes without a hitch. He looks back at Tony, and he doesn't want to leave like this. I was... Huh. Maybe we could have a coffee somewhere later? They could take this opportunity to talk about what happened and to sketch out where to go from here. But the way it got out sounded more like asking Tony on a date, he realizes, which would be great if Tony was in any way amenable to it. But it doesn't seem so. And Steve fidgets because Tony's not answering, still hovering above the alley. Seconds tick off, and the more Tony just stays there silent, the more Steve wants to curse because he made things weird again. Shit, he should have left with a simple friendly exchange and built on that. It was just an idea. Of course we don't. Steve tries to backtrack, but Tony finally answers. Fuck. Shit, I missed that. I was on another line with Happy. Jesus fucking Christ, I have to go. Tony's tone is clipped. Something bad must have happened. What is it? Steve asks, even though it's clearly none of his business. I can't believe he did something so stupid. I took away the suit. He had no parachute. Fuck! Suits and parachutes again. Steve has an idea who this is about. Did something happen with Spider-Man? Yes. He saved my ass, that's for sure. That plane had billions in tech. Reactors. Suits. The prototype for your new shield. Jesus, I can't believe the winged asshole had the balls to hijack my plane. Spidey made it crash on Coney Island's beach. I need to go. Whatever it is, it sounds big, and the mention of a shield prototype is probably the best news Steve's heard in weeks. Tony wouldn't work on his gear if he had no desire to forgive him, right? Go then. Hopefully they'll find a moment to talk another time. Oh, I will, right when this is over. Get out of here yourself before someone sees you, Tony urges. You're no use to anyone behind bars, and I don't have time to deal with the fallout. Being told so plainly sounds like a rebuke, but he knows that Tony's words turn cutting when he's worried or threatened. And as harsh as it sounds, it's true. I'm going, Steve assures. Thanks for the tip. They're Hydra, by the way, and I don't know if there are still men in the last two basements, but they have lasers. Fuck. Okay. There's a 5-second lag before he speaks again. Told Viz, it's all right. He's got it under control. Great. Steve really, really does not want to go, but he has to. It was good seeing you, Tony. Let's keep in touch. Sure. Now scram, Rogers, and for the love of God, keep under the radar. That beard and floppy hair isn't enough of a disguise. He even makes shooing motions with the gauntlet, which makes Steve smile. I'll do my best. He does a jaunty salute before reluctantly turning around and leaving. This was a cordial exchange. Surely they can continue that way. Start mending fences, building bridges, other construction-based idioms. That's all he's asking for, really. He runs crouched across three roofs, just in case someone looks up. Then goes down to street level. After that, Steve weaves his way through the alleys until he reaches the rendezvous point with Scott and Clint. It takes about 10 minutes tops, and the relief on their faces when he gets there is plain as day. Told you I would be fine, Steve says. Clint rolls his eyes. Of course you'd say that. It was way too close for my taste. Yeah, and a total bust, Scott adds. I wouldn't say that. Steve says. His phone buzzes in his pocket, and he takes it out to see a text from Tony. Received from Tony Burner at 11:08. It was nice to see you, too. Steve smiles. I wouldn't say that at all. The end.